We're looking at the future of antitrust laws and what it means to have monopoly power in this country. On The Morning Show, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The likes of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, to name a few, have faced a number of lawsuits in recent years from the Justice Department, from the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, from attorneys general, all trying to root out monopoly power and dominance. How do you expect the rise in corporate mergers will affect your daily life? Can you make connections to inflation that we're seeing? 800-642-1234. Attorney Wendy Ahrens is Madison Partner at Hush Blackwell, working on antitrust and competition litigation. Wendy, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thanks for having me again, Kate. Nice to be here.
Well, I went down a bit of a rabbit hole, I suppose, started wondering about the roots of the word antitrust and where it came from. And it turns out in the 1800s, John D. Rockefeller lumps together a bunch of different businesses under the same group of, air quotes, trustees to gain more central control. And then the word trust came to be used to refer to these large companies or groups of companies. And surely you have more nuance, but how do you like to explain antitrust law and what it is?
Yeah, great question. And I think your rabbit hole has given you some great insight into the genesis of antitrust law generally. But currently, they prohibit unlawful mergers and certain business practices, and they're really very broadly worded. So the Sherman Act that was passed in 1890 was the first federal law that outlawed practices that were harmful to consumers, such as monopolies, cartels, and trusts. And over the years, because of the very broad nature of the statute, courts have really been left to decide which conduct is illegal based on the facts of each case. And courts have done so. And also, I might add, the federal agencies, along with state AGs, have applied the antitrust laws over the years in the face of these changing markets. And so, you know, antitrust laws have generally had the basic same objective over, you know, the past 100 years or more.
It's interesting you say that, because in these mega mergers, it seems it's often district court judges who are in the heart of the litigation, either allowing or stopping a merger from going through. And of course, attorneys general in the mix, too, with appeals. But can you reflect on what role judges and courts are having in deciding the state of corporate competition in America?
Well, no doubt they've played an integral role. And certainly, you know, they've had to apply the Clayton Act, which is the statute that applies to, in addition to the Sherman Act, which applies to illegal mergers and acquisitions. And so certainly courts have really, really helped to shape the law in terms of what's an illegal merger or acquisition. But also, as I mentioned before, antitrust agencies, both the U.S. Department of Justice, their antitrust division, as well as the Federal Trade Commission and state attorneys general, have also shaped, you know, what is considered an illegal merger or acquisition. They issued joint guidance. The federal agencies issued joint guidance for the business community to provide some transparency and some certainty as to how, you know, the agencies would enforce the Clayton Act and Sherman Act against mergers and acquisitions.
And it's a bigger tent than just mergers and acquisitions. There's like bid rigging and price fixing and then resale price maintenance. It seems to be there's a lot out there to regulate.
Oh, sure. Aside from mergers and acquisitions, certainly, you know, the Sherman Act covers the per se or automatically illegal offenses where, you know, the fact of the agreement itself between competitors regarding prices, regarding bid rigging, regarding market allocation, those are considered kind of the most egregious offenses and, you know, can be criminally prosecuted. There's also the Sherman Act Section 2, which outlaws or prohibits monopolization or attempted monopolization and conspiracy to monopolize. And certainly, you know, within the Clayton Act, there's the Robinson-Patman Act, which prohibits price discrimination. So there are a number of statutes at issue here that regulate businesses and their conduct.
And we often maybe rush to conclusions, or if we're not in the mix of the litigation, but we think mergers are bad. There are times, though, when mergers can benefit the consumer to offer services at a lower price than if two companies didn't merge, if they remain separate businesses. What is the side of mergers that you see that maybe we don't hear about as much?
Absolutely. That's exactly right. I mean, you know, a lot of times companies are looking to combine in some way because they'd like to bring a new product to market. They see that they will be able to realize certain benefits or efficiencies from the acquisition or merger that then can be passed on to consumers. So absolutely, that plays a big role and is part of the analysis that's undertaken both by the federal agencies and the state AGs, as well as courts.
We're talking with Wendy Ahrens, who is an attorney looking at antitrust issues, a Madison partner at Hush Blackwell. You can join in. What are your thoughts on how the Biden administration is handling mergers and acquisitions? Do you think antitrust policy should be updated for the tech era? What about Silicon Valley? 800-642-1234. Let's move into more of the tech space and mergers and acquisitions in the area of, like, Microsoft, for instance, this month announcing plans to buy Activision Blizzard for nearly $69 billion, making it the third largest gaming company in the world. What kind of antitrust scrutiny should Microsoft expect there?
You know, I've heard it reported that, you know, they should expect some scrutiny by either DOJ or the FTC. So in the U.S., certainly the deal will receive some type of antitrust scrutiny. And I also expect that there will be other jurisdictions looking at the proposed transaction, such as the EU and potentially China, among others.
Another narrative out there is that our antitrust enforcers are soft, that the FTC is too lax, that, you know, they're not going hard enough at these companies such as Facebook. But do you think antitrust merger enforcement has declined in our country? What's going on?
I don't think it's declined, and I don't think it's soft or lax based on what I've seen. Certainly, you know, there are the deals that receive scrutiny. You know, that scrutiny is a long, intensive process and involves a lot of resources expended by all parties involved. You know, I don't think there's a lack of scrutiny of mergers and acquisitions, certainly.
So when you look at Silicon Valley, and we've seen really a lot of tension with Congress saying we have to reform antitrust law, it is out of date or it is not working. What are your reactions when you watch those proceedings?
Well, I should say I'm not a competition policy scholar, but certainly it's interesting to watch as a practitioner. And again, I come back to the issue that we've seen actually in recent days with the wild swings in the stock market. I mean, businesses and their investors appreciate certainty in terms of any sort of regulatory regime and enforcement mechanism. And so, you know, if the antitrust laws end up, you know, being amended, or, you know, the regulations are changed, or the guidelines, which were just rescinded or being reviewed by DOJ and the FTC are changed, you know, this will cause some disruption in the market, and it may have some unintended consequences. So we'll just have to see how that plays out.
What might those unintended consequences be?
I really, you know, really can't speculate on that, but I would just say that, you know, there are a lot of tools currently at the Biden administration's disposal in terms of, you know, their ability to regulate and enforce the antitrust laws against, you know, big tech, if you will, among other industries. I mean, certainly the Biden administration has come out with a competition policy order back in July, and it not only talked about the technology industry, but it also talked about other industries such as agriculture, transportation, healthcare, banking and finance. So they're really looking at all sectors of the economy.
All sectors, yes. So as you mentioned there, President Biden issues this executive order asserting the administration's authority to regulate corporate consolidations. How do you see President Biden's antitrust views comparing to previous presidents?
Sure. I mean, you know, it's interesting because, you know, for the most part, with respect to presidential administrations, you know, antitrust law and the policy around it doesn't usually change all that much. I mean, there does seem to be a tradition of the executive branch where, you know, they utilize their antitrust enforcement resources in a manner that aligns with political priorities. So, for example, with the Trump administration, you know, there were some allegedly politically motivated investigations into the cannabis and auto manufacturing industries. And here, you know, Biden has pronounced himself as, you know, a populist. He would like to, you know, be seen as obviously working on behalf of the consumers and ensuring that, you know, they're getting a fair shake. And how he does that, you know, through his competition policy order, which, you know, is directed not only at the antitrust agencies, but also at a number of federal agencies. So he's looking at a number of different tools in his toolbox in order to achieve what he's set out in his competition policy order.
Attorney Wendy Ahrens works on complex antitrust and competition issues arising during mergers and acquisitions. What do you think about big tech consolidating the gaming industry? How do you feel about the Biden administration's position on antitrust concerns? Will Congress pass a sweeping antitrust package? Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Wendy Ahrens here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The chair of the Federal Trade Commission, Lina Khan, talked with CNBC last week about enforcement capabilities under her watch. And she gave this example of how the Biden administration is connecting market power to the inflation.
Certain types of mergers and acquisitions over the last few decades have left our supply chains much more brittle. Right? Capacity has been thinned out. And as a result of that, the system as a whole might be less resilient.
So she said, when you have shocks like this pandemic, that can lead to certain price increases. Do you see broader issues with monopoly power? What antitrust bills in Congress are you watching? Does the FTC have teeth taking on Facebook? 800-642-1234. Antitrust attorney Wendy Ahrens with us for about five more minutes. So, Wendy, when you hear Lina Khan there looking more broadly at how inflation can be connected to antitrust and monopoly power, what do you make of that?
I think it's certainly, you know, one position. I think that there are, you know, certain folks out there who are skeptical of the causal connection. And, you know, I think even Biden's own administration, there have been some Treasury Department officials who have, you know, gone on the record to kind of say that they're not sure that there actually is that causal connection between market concentration and the current spate of inflation. Mm-hmm. Certainly, there are a lot of other things going on in recent years that have led up to this point. And I'm not sure that we can connect the dots between the consolidations that has been occurring and has occurred over decades in various industries with the current inflation. There are other tools also to combat inflation. And so, you know, raising prices in and of itself is not illegal under antitrust law. Unfortunately, there's no federal price gouging statute. There are price gouging statutes at the state level. So, you know, there's no tool in the toolbox, so to speak, that would directly speak to, you know, price gouging at the federal level.
I see. Yes. And you said earlier that the FTC is not too lax, that its enforcers are not soft. But last year, former Federal Trade Commission chair Joseph Simons and other staffs, they resigned en masse. How could staffing shortages at you know, our nation's regulatory agency affect antitrust oversight?
certainly, you know, there have been reports of staffing shortages and, you know, the FTC being under-resourced, which, you know, could lead to, I would imagine, certain decisions at the FTC about which cases to pursue and which ones, you know, they don't have the resources to pursue. But again, you know, all of that's just speculation in terms of, you know, how the staffing shortage is affecting their enforcement. They certainly seem to be, the FTC does, taking on cases that, you know, before we have not seen them historically taking on. So for example, just a couple of days ago, it was announced that the FTC is suing to block Lockheed Martin's acquisition of a missile component producer. And, you know, traditionally, the DOJ's antitrust division would be the agency to review that case. So if the FTC is really, you know, that under-resourced, it's strange to me that they would be the ones to be suing to block Lockheed Martin's acquisition and not DOJ.
Besides Lockheed, you know, what cases are you watching most closely and why are you watching those cases?
Sure. I mean, there's a number of, you know, I think deals that are potentially under review that it's just not been made public. But certainly Amazon's, you know, acquisition of MGM is one. We're also watching, you know, the tech cases closely. We're certainly watching what is going on in the healthcare space. The Federal Trade Commission is very active in, as our state AGs, in enforcing antitrust laws in terms of healthcare systems that combine. And, you know, so those are the ones that I'm watching. I'm sure there are others, you know, in addition to the Microsoft proposed acquisition of Activision, that others are watching, and we'll just have to see. I mean, the cases where the FTC or DOJ is potentially going to review the deal under a set of guidelines called the vertical merger guidelines are interesting ones to watch, because the vertical merger guidelines typically, you know, deals where companies are coming together, there's actual overlap between products or services. Those are reviewed under the horizontal merger guidelines. And that's kind of a more tried and true analysis. The vertical merger guidelines are where companies who are at different levels of the supply chain, generally speaking, come together. And, you know, the Activision acquisition seems to be one of those that would fit under the vertical merger guidelines. Now, both DOJ and the FTC recently announced that they're reviewing jointly both sets of guidelines. So we'll have to see, you know, with respect to these vertical deals, you know, what standard are they going to use to analyze these deals? And are they going to use some sort of non-traditional analysis?
Well, Wendy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
Wendy Ahrens, antitrust attorney and Madison partner at Hush Blackwell. More than 10,000 people in Wisconsin have died from COVID. This month's spike in infections saw more Wisconsinites hospitalized with the disease than at any time since the pandemic started. And this week, WPR is sharing stories of how the pandemic has been felt by Wisconsinites in their own words.
My name's Jackie Cutts, and I currently live in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I worked frontline from a public health standpoint on pandemic response for 2020 and all through 2021. You work all the time and you think about it when you're not working. And it was kind of this all-encompassing thing where you just want to help people and save lives and try to guide the community through this really intense, awful experience, but then find that the very people you're trying to help, some of them are the people who don't just not want help, but they hate you for it. I still have no regrets. And I'm fiercely proud of the work that I did with my team in 2021. But there's only so many times you can, you know, be swore at and yelled at and called names and receive death threats. You know, there's only so much of that before it kind of starts to wane on you, even if you know that what you're doing is the right thing.
My name is Kyle from DeForest, Wisconsin. I live with my wife and my two-year-old daughter. When the pandemic began, we did only want to see people outside. So we were outside on our patio my wife and I had chairs on one side with our daughter, and my mother and my stepfather were on the other side. And that, I'm sure, was very heartbreaking that she couldn't hold her granddaughter. She didn't want to wear a mask. My mother and my sisters like to live their lives as if COVID-19 isn't really happening. So every time that we visited since then, it was the same thing. We have to be outside. And that was fine until the winter months hit. At that point, the vaccines were just coming out. And I was so excited. But then after talking to my sister, my mom decided, no, we're too hurt. We haven't seen our granddaughter or niece in 6 months. We don't think you're ready. And I couldn't believe it. I knew I was causing pain, but I just didn't know how hurt they were.
My name is Marita Stolenwerk. I have 3 children, a 5th grader and 2 4th graders, and I currently live in Brookfield, Wisconsin. During the pandemic, I was a consultant for a national firm, and when I heard that we were going to lock down, I went to go talk to my manager, and I cried. I said, I don't know how I'm going to do this and have the kids at home. I remember I was rehearsing to give a presentation with my colleagues, and my daughter sat behind me and screamed because she needed my help before she could submit an assignment, and I couldn't help her because I was busy. So in December of 2020, I decided that I would apply for another opportunity. And I felt very conflicted about leaving the position that I was in. I had worked really hard to be at that position, but I felt like I was failing in so many ways. It was a little bit of a pay cut, but it is more manageable in terms of me being able to be engaged with my family.
Some people interviewed for this story shared their experiences with WPR's Wisconsin. WPR's series on the pandemic's effect on Wisconsinites continues tomorrow. Just ahead, we hear from an expert on Latino politics. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.